Vodka O'Clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love, and you're listening to Vodka O'Clock Podcast from AmberUnmasked.com. Today, my guest returns is Jamal Igle, who is wonderful, and I love that I get to run into him a couple times a year because he's like so much fun to be around. So, Jamal, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we're usually pretty tame when we chat because it's usually just like all good, fun, wholesome stuff.
Right.
But I know that you're with Action Lab now, and they do have a mature line.
Right.
So just a little warning that once in a while the titles that we talk about might be not appropriate for, you know, certain audiences.
Yes, and there may be occasional cursing from my part. So.
Yeah, absolutely, me too. Plus, it's Fleet Week. I'm just gonna curse like a sailor, right? It's just a tradition.
Sounds like a plan.
Me every day. I don't know where I got it from because I didn't grow up around that. Somehow I just picked it up.
Fuck if I know.
Yeah, really. What is delighting your world these days?
What is delighting my world these days, just in general, or because it's been like I'm getting ready to tell you before we started recording it. This week especially has just been crazed because between penciling the Terminator for Dark Horse and today, for example, I was at my daughter's school helping her. She's doing her first talent show.
Ooh.
And she's singing, so I was helping her rehearse, and they were doing a dress rehearsal, which is the best possible dress rehearsal you can have with a bunch of elementary school kids. So there's a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, bored kids running around, exasperated adults trying to get their goddamn attention.
Yeah. Oh man.
So that was going on. But earlier this week I was in Las Vegas at the Diamond Retailer Conference.
I didn't even realize that. I guess I miss it when it's not on the East Coast. Like, I just don't pay attention.
Yeah, this is apparently, from what I understand, this is the first time in quite a few years that they've had it outside of a convention, like being connected to an actual convention.
Yeah, because sometimes it was like before Baltimore Comic Con, and then you would go right to the convention, right. And that was really cool.
Right. So I winged my way out to Sin City and realized that I'm about 20 years too old for Las Vegas.
Oh, God. Wow.
Last time I was actually in Las Vegas.
Was the retailer convention productive?
It was very productive. It was a different experience for me because I had to put on my marketing director hat and pitch to retailers. And basically the way they had it set up was we had our booth, and everybody had their booths, and they sat about 20 chairs in front of us. So it was sort of like speed dating, where each group of retailers would come, sit down in front of you, and you would pitch your wares to them and pitch your projects to them and the stuff that's coming up. So it was, after about the fourth group, because I was there with Action Lab CEO Brian Seaton, and after about the fourth group, we started getting into a groove. We were picking up each other's cues, and things were moving along pretty much at pace. And then after the initial, there was like two 90-minute sessions, so it was sort of like boom, 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 lunch, boom, 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 dinner.
Wow, that does sound like you would sort of just start speaking without real consciousness and I wonder how like theater actors do their job, like after the eighth time and you're saying the same line.
Well, I don't imagine, with my acting background, it's not really that much different than, having to run through a scene over and over again, because you do actually improv after a while. You can't say the same thing absolutely every time. And when you're in that situation, there are things that you're going to forget or things that you need to remind yourself or remind, Brian, or Brian needed to remind me of something. And there were times where we ran maybe, because there were 10-minute sessions, so there were times where we ran a little bit early. And we would look out in the audience and we'd ask if anybody had any questions, and they were all just kind of like, we're good. But
okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I would expect it to sort of be like a little mini panel, like they would ask questions afterwards.
It is. In some groups they did, and others they didn't. But we gave them a really good overview of what we were doing, especially as far as like the danger zone stuff. And with the one of the announcements we made at the show was that Ray Anthony Height's series Midnight Tiger, which started as a mini series, is now going to be an ongoing monthly series.
That's really cool. I've been connected with him on Twitter. A really great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. But I have not run. I have not had to deal with a single diva-ish attitude with any of the creators, you know, connected to Action Lab. It's been really, really good.
Well, you know, those M Theory guys are just drunk. They're too drunk to be divas.
Sweetheart, we are all drunk.
That's true. I just love it that their studio is like filled with scotch. I'm like, can I come work for you?
Whatever gets them through the day, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome. And they go and they're productive and they do these great events and, you know, they're marvelous.
Absolutely. So yeah, so it was good. It was good. It was a different experience for me because there were more than a few retailers who didn't make the connection. There were a couple who knew who I was, but make the connection because they thought I was just the sales guy. And I actually had a retailer do a double take, like pick up a copy of Molly Danger, look at the cover, and look at my badge, and just be like, no, really? It's like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, you're wearing more than one hat. It's okay.
This is true. I've had to change my official title to the currently, from what I understand, all-encompassing title of Creative Services Specialist.
Okay. Because I saw that you were monkeying around with like the business card design and stuff like that.
Yeah, because I was trying to, because after a while, it's kind of hard to say, well, let's see, I'm a penciler, inker, colorist, I've done editorial, I'm a writer, I do graphic design, storyboards, concept designs, I've worked.
That's how I feel, too. I've had people go, how do you want to be introduced? I'm like, oh, dear God, just pick one. I don't know.
Depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, what works for this?
Exactly. Which is... weird, especially like, for example, I did this job. I've done a couple of CS jobs recently, both for fairly large companies, one of them being Edelman Creative. And like the guy that I knew who hired me for the Edelman job would, like, as I was there, because I was there for the day, and as I was there, he'd bring over the comic book fans to talk to me.
Nice.
It was just like, wow, I didn't know you did this kind of stuff. I was like, yep, I've been doing this for about 24 years.
I try, you know, it's so funny because when I go off to day jobs, I'm like, I try to spot the nerds. Right. So I'm like, let's see, who has little figures on their desks and, you know, check out the wallpaper of their computer.
Right. it depends on where, if you're there long enough, I think you could spot them, but it depends on where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. So did you do Free Comic Book Day?
I did do Free Comic Book Day. I was at Wild Pig Comics in Kenilworth, actually, for Free Comic Book Day.
That was good. I was down there right after our friend Jamie D passed away. And it was right around Free Comic Book Day. It was the day after.
Right.
So it was one of those things where I went down to Free Comic Book Day there. I, like, after doing mine at Comic Fusion, mm-hmm. I went down to Wild Pig and didn't get there till like 8 o'clock.
Oh, wow. I'm sure it was probably still going on.
Yeah, it was. They were gaming. Yeah, they were gaming. And it was, you know, there's always gaming. So, So it was just one of those, like, surreal things to see, you know, a couple of the guys from Comic Geek Speak and, you know, the whole Wild Pig crew.
Right.
Because it was just, like, we just needed to be there.
Right.
I'm sure you felt the same way.
I did. And I was, you know, if I had not had to drive upstate to upstate New York to be with the family, because we'd already had plans for the weekend, I would have stayed longer than I did. But, you know, everybody treated me well at Wild Pig, you know, and, you know, I do miss Jamie, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Jamie was, it didn't matter how long it had been between, you know, shows that we'd seen each other. We always took, you know, a good 5 or 10 minutes to sit down and just talk one-on-one and catch up and, you know, to see, you know, how he's doing. And, you know, when I found out, I was actually on my way home from my daughter's school, and I was on the bus, and I was flipping through my phone on Facebook, and I forget who made the announcement. I think it was Shauna. I think Shauna was the one. And it just sort of knocked the air out of me. It really did.
Yeah. I sort of had this, you know, shocking type of reaction when he'd been sick for so many years.
Right.
And we all knew, I mean, we had that opportunity to prepare ourselves, and yet you're not prepared.
No,
like
you're never really prepared.
You're never really prepared. I mean, I even went out to see him because I'm much more drivable
right
to Reading than you are. And, so I was out there like a few days before he passed away, and in the hospital room, and Ian and, you know, a couple of the other New York guys came out,
right.
And it was, you know, it was like this great moment where every day he was surrounded by people who loved and cared about him.
That's good to know. That really, I mean, I did see the picture that they took in his room.
Yep.
But it is good to know. I mean, I think ultimately that's the way you really want to have it. I think that's, if, you know, when I go, I pray that I've done, you know, that I was as gregarious and as good a person as I would hope that I was, that I would be, in the end, that I would be surrounded by my loved ones that way. I'm sure it meant the world to have everybody there that could make
it.
Oh,
yeah. And honestly, I don't think he was feeling a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think he was feeling any bit of pain at all.
No.
Because he was, you know, well medicated. And, you know, that's always a concern, I think, for anybody.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to feel pain.
That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, a rough time because, you know, the shows and the community of CGS and Wild Pig and... It's global.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing about that show, you know, and those guys this is a community that they built. This isn't something that they inherited. This is something that started with Brian and Peter, and extended to all the other guys, and it, you know, and it's still going strong.
Yeah. It's, you know, and it's just it's brought the really important people into my life. And that's something that I sort of wanted to talk about regarding podcasting.
Right.
And I just didn't, I don't know. I just never really drafted that post, and I didn't have the opportunity to really talk
right.
to anybody about it.
Right.
But the fact that you were there for Free Comic Book Day, and then I got there later, it was just, this is the moment. This is, you know, where I want to say, it's like, hey, we're just, you know, we're folks that came together because of something.
Right.
You know, like, I know you because of that show. I know Mike Norton because of that show.
Right.
I know, you know, like, Dave Wachter and J.K. Woodward because of that
right.
show. You know, these are, like, the most important people in my life. So, you know, it's, you know, comics has all done that.
Right. No, that's true. It's true. And it's... You know, it's wonderful to see, you know, it's nice to have that type of, you know, psychological and emotional refuge where you're with like-minded people, and you know that there is enough camaraderie that you can joke with each other, and you can have those types of really deep, in-depth conversations where you can disagree and where you can argue, and you know at the end of the day that it's not personal. You're all passionate about something.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, and it's just, it's one of those things where because every, you know, you have your different kinds of fans like that, where you have people that can be passionate and argumentative, and then you have people like Sean Pryor, who, you know, who you worked with,
right.
And it's like, you get Sean, and there is, I don't think there's a more zen person in comics today. Then I was just like, you can just listen to Sean's voice, or you can just look at his Twitter feed.
Sean is a very positive cat. I've had a lot of conversations with Sean. I've been privy to the times when Sean has lost his shit. But
that's awesome, because I can't even imagine.
Oh, it's rare. It really is rare. But at the same time, it's like when he gets pissed, it's epic. It really is.
Because I was like, I made sure, like, he and John Carroll, like, went off to zone. They're always going to, like, marathon race things, healthy stuff. And I'm just like, Sean, I'm like, and then they went off to Appleseed.
Yeah.
I'm like, just bring John back in one piece. I'm like, you're the babysitter today. Because we've had some good CGS Super shows.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
So, you know.
With everything that has gone on, you know, that things will ever be the same, but, you know, hopefully, you know, there will be, you know, they won't let go of what they have.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, did you go up to Appleseed too?
No. Okay. I don't think I've ever been to the Appleseed show. I've done so far this year, where we're May, including the Diamond Show, I've done six appearances so far this year.
That's pretty respectable.
Yeah, I have a bunch more to go. Connecticut, and now it looks like I'm going to Toronto, and I might be going to San Diego and New York for NYCC, and going to Tacoma, Washington in November. And yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. So
you bring up, you mentioned New York. Are you interested in what Reed Pop is doing with this June show? This basically taking just Artist Alley and having a show and panels and stuff specifically about comics.
Here's the thing about that show, which is I would have been interested had one it not been scheduled against Cliff Galbraith's show, the New York Comic Fest in White Plains, and Eternal Con out on Long Island, and I think there's one other show that weekend as well.
Well, and
a week before Philly, a week before Heroes Con.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because when I heard that it was scheduled the same time as Eternal, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I was like, I know that Eternal is a big draw for the cosplay community.
Right.
So that's out on Long Island for anybody that's listening. So I was like, geez, I guess I know all my cosplay friends will be at Eternal Con. But when I was chatting with them on Facebook, it seems like people are going to try to do like one day at one show and one day at the other.
Which is
show.
Expensive considering like two of those shows are $20 a day.
Yeah. And it's New York.
You know, obviously I have no problem with it being New York, but you know, I'm sure there
obviously,
are
obviously, yeah, because you could just go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I, and it's
a good idea. I'm excited about it because I do think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's also my mother's birthday is on the 14th.
Oh.
And the 14th is also Father's Day.
It is?
Yeah.
Oops.
I think, actually.
If it's not, it's either the 14th or 15th, because it's either a Saturday or Sunday.
Right.
That's okay. My dad's present will be me not being around.
Oh,
That's the way I look at it. Happy Father's Day. You don't have to deal with me.
It's that Sunday the 15th. So
okay.
Yeah. So no, I don't think I'm gonna do. I don't think I'm gonna do anything. I'm actually, you know, especially if I'm going to be, you know, going out to San Diego. You know, I don't think I need to squeeze another show in.
Yeah, even
if it is in my backyard.
Yeah, because I mean it's a little competitive of itself.
Right.
Like, do you want to invest your money into the big show in October? Do you want to invest your money into a June show, more focused comics, indie based,
right,
or whatever? I mean, I don't know. I think of it as indie based, but they just announced that Marvel will be there and have a booth.
They're going to have a booth.
They're going to actually have a booth, like have a presence in a booth.
Isn't that sort of like the antithesis of what they were saying they wanted to do with this?
I don't know. Specifically, they wanted it to be about comics.
Right.
So I'm kind of cool if Marvel's there. You know, I think that's awesome. More panels and stuff.
Right.
DC didn't even have a booth at the last big show.
Yeah, this is true. Well,
so,
they had their designated tables at Artist Alley last year. And then they had the Superman costume display that was tucked on the far side.
I couldn't find it.
You know where it was? You know the 34th Street entrance?
Yeah.
Over on 11? It was downstairs where they used to hold Anime Expo. It was on that first landing going down the escalators.
Oh, okay.
Like all the way on the far side. And they didn't tell it. Because originally...
I saw pictures of it. I'm like, I know it's here somewhere.
Yeah, but originally, if I remember correctly, at least from the press release that I read, was they were going to have the costumes displayed all over the show floor instead of like all lined up in a row the way that they had.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because, you know, and it's interesting because, it's one of those things because when Marvel did that with the Iron Man armor,
right,
it was like hugely popular.
It was impressive the way they did it. They had the Hall of Armors. It was all lit up. It was in the middle of the show floor. It's an impressive display. This was just sort of like, okay, let's put them all in glass cases. Like, let's not like do something fancy. Let's not like put like faux, you know, Superman movie crystals around everything to make it look cool, or you know, have like different like, or they, you know, they could have had like different models of Superman spaceship from the various shows, like displayed with the costumes. You know, just put a little more effort into it.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on that they sort of wrote that show off. I mean, I know that I'm sure know more about it than I do, but I know that they moved a lot of their offices and staff or whatever to California, and there's job postings that I saw today that the Comic Beat, Heidi McDonald posted, mm-hmm, that DC is hiring all these California positions.
Yeah, I've actually been to the Burbank office. There are people still in the transition to moving. There are people who've already made the move, people that I know who are making the move. That I've had conversations with who are going to make the move, but a lot of people are not going to make the move because, you know, you're uprooted unless you feel like,
yeah,
you know.
If your life is in New York, then your life is in New York or wherever.
That's the thing. Like, do you know Sarah Litt?
No.
I worked with Sarah. Sarah was Kwanzaa Johnson's assistant when I was doing the Ray with Jimmy Palmiotti. And I actually knew Sarah before that because she used to be an assistant editor at Vertigo. And Sarah made the move to Burbank a couple of years back. And then after about, you know, 6 months or so, just said, you know, screw this, I'm coming back. And now she's back in Jersey. You know, as somebody who has done it, like, I did move to Los Angeles after spending most of my life on the East Coast. It didn't work for me. And you know, not if you are, you know, I've spoken to a lot of, you know, East Coast people who have tried to make that transition. California is a very different kind of beast.
I know it's one of those things because there's a couple comic book companies,
mm-hmm,
that are out there, like Boom and IDW,
right,
and I would love to make that move, if there was a reason to, first of all. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I could adjust, and I don't know that I could be away from, you know, from my people here.
Right.
My folks are here on New Jersey. They're never going to leave New Jersey.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I think there's things about California that sound so appealing to me. Like, I think I would do much better food wise and health wise, maybe, because
you think so.
I would think so, but I mean, because pretty much all I eat right now are like bagels. Because I'm vegetarian, and I'm starting to be allergic to like so much stuff that there's like all the stuff I love I can't even eat anymore.
I started another diet, and I have recently given up most carbs.
I know that you were tinkering around with different options.
Yeah, I've given up.
That's all I live on is carbs.
Yeah, so did I, and I didn't realize like how much of my diet, because I love my rice, I love my potatoes, I love my bread, you know, and I started after, it's been about a month since I started my diet, and it's been, at first it was very, very hard. Like, I haven't had a slice of pizza in a month.
When I gave up dairy, like, people were like, oh, how hard was it to give up meat? I'm like, giving up meat was nothing compared to giving up cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there was just nothing. Like, the fact that I couldn't just go get a slice of pizza, you know, it's one of those things where you don't realize it.
Yeah, no, it's very daunting, especially once you start to realize, like, because I did Atkins at first. I'm not doing Atkins anymore because it's way too severe. It's way too extreme. But, you know, doing Atkins, you start to realize, like, because everything has sugar in it. And, you know, complex carbs get turned into sugar. And, and there's high fructose corn syrup in everything. And, you know, it just reduces your options for food, basically, to, like, meat and dairy for the most part. And even then, like, you know, it's hard cheese and not much else.
That's the thing. It's like, okay, well, we have, like, you know, here with, like, our vegetation and stuff, we get, you know, maybe, like, June to maybe October. Okay. We have, like, a really good harvest season of, like, fresh vegetables.
Right.
So it's like, all right, where can I eat food all year round? You know? I still feel like a pioneer, like, okay, get my root vegetables and get them in the root cellar.
There are worse things in the world. But, yeah, I forgot the point I was going to make.
Oh, about the West Coast.
Oh, about the West Coast.
And adjusting,
So adjusting to the West Coast, at least for me, it's a very difficult transition, because it was the first time that I had been that far away from any kind of support system, you know, as far as, like, family and friends. I was terribly homesick the entire time that I was there. And it's not that I didn't meet people, and it's not that I didn't, you know, make friends with people, and people that I still talk to, but... being a guy from New York City, who up until that point hadn't really driven a lot. I learned to drive at 26, which is, I know a lot of people listening to this are going to be like, 26? Who waits until 26 to get their driver's license?
Yeah, but that's a New York thing.
Exactly.
Like, I hear we're starting to, like, take lessons at 15 and 16.
Right. I didn't have drivers ed in high school.
We have to.
Yeah. So I didn't have that experience. So, you know, of course you're driving anywhere. And then, like, the year that I was out there, like, I knew people, but I was really, really sort of still kind of feeling things out and still, you know, fairly uncomfortable. I mean, I know anybody who's met me at a convention, well, you know, tends to think that I am, you know, just naturally gregarious all the time. But I do have my moments of just shyness, and it takes me a while to warm up to people. So, you know, it took me a while to really warm up to people. And at the time, especially, I didn't cook. So I was eating, and I lived in like, I lived basically in downtown Culver City, which at the time was not as nice as it is now, apparently, from what I've been told from friends of mine who live out there. And it was surrounded, like, Venice Boulevard was nothing but fast food joints for miles.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I would watch stuff like, you know, like Anthony Bourdain, right, or any of those food shows, and it was always about, like, about the junk food, about the food trucks, mm-hmm, or the hot dogs. And
but this was the, you know, 2000, so we didn't even have that many, like, the food trucks were literally the roach coaches.
Oh yeah, not like the gourmet that it is today.
Yeah, that didn't start popping up until a long time after I moved from Los Angeles, and even I think it probably would have been even worse had I been around.
I know, where like the quality is so different. Like I have not seen one of these, like, you know, like vegan food trucks that I hear about, or, you know, like Big Gay ice cream truck that's out there in New York.
Oh yeah, no, I've seen a Big Gay ice cream truck. I've seen that they had a festival here in Prospect Park a couple of weeks ago. So they had like Criff Dogs, and then like Big Gay ice cream, and then like,
cool,
and then like the Philly cheesesteak truck that I've seen in a couple, seen around, and then, yeah, so, you know, so it's out here. And then, you know, of course, then you've got like the, even like the super fancy like burger trucks that are in Midtown and that sort of thing. So, but none of that stuff existed, you know, when I lived in Los Angeles. So when I lived in Los Angeles, I was working at Sony, and the Mexican guys in the Roach Coach would pull up in front of the office and wouldn't leave at like 11 and wouldn't leave till 3 o'clock. because there's nothing else that animators can do except draw and eat.
Keep them chained to their desk.
Exactly. You know, you don't want them to go too far. You know, make sure there's food around.
Well, that's what it sounds like a TV writer's room.
Oh, yeah.
Is like.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Like that their hours are so insane, and it's sort of like they never leave and they have no life. And like, if you ever go out there and your dream is to be a writer, just don't even consider, like, you can't even have a plant. Don't even think about goldfish at this point. Like, you can't even do plants.
I purposely got an apartment that was less than a mile away from Adelaide, which was Sony's animation arm. And it becomes sort of like its own little microcosm, because they would have like Friday night game, like video game night, and people are hanging out and like having pizza parties, and, you know, having been a freelancer most of my career, and I've had rare spots where I've been in corporate situations like that, but not on that level, like not that level of intimacy. Like everybody knew what everybody else was doing. And it wasn't something that I was used to. So,
okay,
you know, my inherent shyness kind of kept me away from really getting to know anybody while I was at Sony. And I really wasn't there that long comparatively, because I was there for about 6 months, and then I went to work for Marvel. And then I was working at home again. And then the loneliness and the depression and everything else started to get to me again. And then finally I just said, you know, fuck it, I gotta get back to New York. I can't do this anymore.
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting how some of the publishers, you know, still have that tradition of people going into the bullpen, mm-hmm, and stuff, and the other ones don't. And I know, like Action Lab, you guys are all over the place.
Yeah, we are a scattered crew, although the company is based out of Pittsburgh.
Right. I know this. I noticed that in the press releases it'll say Pittsburgh, yes. And I'm like, okay, well, I know Chad's there.
Right. Chad's there. Brian's there. I hear rumor of one or two other principals actually making the move there. So.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's got a good comic community.
Yeah, yeah, it's getting stronger every day.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's especially indie heavy.
Yeah.
They're, it's a really, like, supportive area.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not necessarily the most fun place to drive. Just my own two cents.
Okay.
Saying.
Well, I forgot you lived there for a while, right?
I lived there a little while, yeah. And, you know, I live in a really different place. Like, when I came back here, mm-hmm, from Pittsburgh, I was so used to this. I got used to this like crazy city driving, which is like not going over 20 miles an hour.
Right.
that when I got back here, where it's just like long stretches of farm road, I was driving too slow all the time, and it's just like I get on out here on the roads and people are doing like 9 miles an hour, right. and it's like I'm like getting honked at and I'm getting passed on double yellow lines all the time. I'm like, just stop, just leave me alone. I just don't want to hit a deer. I hit, there were three today that I slammed on my brakes for.
Right.
I'm like, no, really. You don't have to go so fast.
Well, here you can trade it off for living in New York, where hardly anybody actually knows how to drive.
I know.
Like, I had a crash. Living in Los Angeles is a crash course in driving. Like, I'm not going to say that I'm an expert driver, but you spend enough time driving on the LA freeway, you. It's training.
I expect a city
right.
to have their shit together more, to like have trains and stuff. and apparently, all I hear about LA is that it takes 3 hours to get anywhere.
Well, it does, and there is a train. There is a train, and they keep expanding it, but it frightens me because I'm still waiting for the big one to hit. So.
yeah.
yeah.
We have a train that comes like once a day. Yeah. It comes at like a certain time in the morning. Right. It takes people as far, straight line a few stops and then to New York.
Right.
And then it returns at night.
Right.
So if you've missed the train, you've missed it. And that's why I like when all these people are just like, come over to New York, let's just go have some drinks. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, do you know how hard that is?
Well, and at the same, and in your defense, driving to New York is not really an option unless you've got $150 to drop on parking.
And that's what I usually do, just because I feel a little bit safer.
Right.
Like, I know that I can get out.
Right.
Because I've been stuck there where the ferry stops running and then you have to wait an hour,
right.
or the train stops running, everything sort of shuts down.
I've been there. I went out to Jersey after New York Comic Con last year, because that's where some of the Action Lab guys were staying, and I had just missed the last ferry to Manhattan, so I had to call a cab and have a cab drive me back to Midtown.
Yep. The one time that I got stuck, it was so pathetic,
mm-hmm.
because at this point, people don't believe my story.
Right.
Like, no, really. Like, I can be lost anywhere. And the way that I had gotten into Manhattan that day was through the ferry at Weehawken, which takes you right to the Javits Center.
Right.
And when I missed it, all it takes is a sheer matter of minutes, I ended up seeing, I think, Kevin Maguire in a bar.
Right.
And he, at the time, was living in Jersey City. So he's like, oh, okay, well, here's what we'll do. And he managed to, like, get my dopey lost ass to the PATH train,
okay.
which is a totally different part of the city.
Right.
Over to his place in Jersey City. And then there's some kind of other train that goes from there up to Weehawken.
Right.
And this is like hours. This is an adventure. I'm like, I cannot believe this is happening.
Well, don't feel bad. Anytime I drive into Jersey, I get lost. I get turned around at least once. Like,
well, that's because we don't normally allow people to make left-hand turns.
There we go. That explains a lot.
And then a couple of times when you are allowed to, it's just to fuck you up. Because you're like, okay, I'm over here on the right. I'm going to take the jug handle. Nope, it's actually a left-hand turn.
No, I mean, I have missed exits.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're renumbered. I think they renumber them every year for fun.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's just, Governor Christie, if I may tirade for a moment.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, we all know that there's, like, almost none of the Hurricane Sandy aid has been distributed at this point. And he's in this Bridgegate scandal that he apparently had nothing to do with, but all of his cohorts somehow shut down the George Washington Bridge and, you know, caused all of these traffic problems. I was coming home one day on Route 80, which is just a regular old interstate, you know, it's whatever, it's big, and it's got the Pennsylvania to New York traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to take my exit, and it's shut down.
Ooh.
At rush hour.
Oh.
To fix potholes from the snowplow.
Oh, jeez.
Because they couldn't do that at night when they fixed all of the other potholes. They had to do it at 5:30.
Because they don't want to pay overtime. That's why.
Yeah. I'm just like, you've got to be joking. Like, this cannot be a real thing. You know, it's those are the things that we go through. I mean, I don't know what I did in traffic before Twitter.
Right.
Now I sit there. And I sit there and I sit there and I'm on Twitter.
Right.
And people are just like, you shouldn't be texting while driving. I'm like, I'm not driving. This is not a multitasking skill set here.
Oh, man.
So I have yet to escape successfully.
There will come a time. Don't worry, you'll be okay.
Yeah, there will be. There definitely will be. I'm glad to hear that Action Labs got some Pittsburgh activity.
Yeah.
Because it is just such a fun town. What's going on? Catch me up on some of the titles though, because I know that like Skyward is doing really well.
Skyward's doing well. Skyward's kicking all kinds of ass. We've got the next issue of Skyward that we just solicited for August is going to have a variant cover by Darwin Cook, of all people.
Oh, okay, because the Phil Noto cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, at this point, I'm like, oh, my God.
Exactly. Well, you know, if there's one thing that, you know, we can do at Action Lab is we can call in favors.
And that's a good thing.
So we've got Skyward. We've got, you know,
I know Princeless is doing like an anthology section.
Well,
or something.
Yes, Princeless is actually good. Is actually we had a sort of an issue with the artist that was going to do the third volume of Princeless, and we had to hire Jeremy had to hire a new artist, and that new artist is actually redrawing the first issue. So we're going to resolicit Princeless at a later time. With a new artist attached. So we've got Princeless, we've got Skyward, we've got Hero Cats, which is debuting in August.
I'm really excited for Hero Cats.
So it's Hero.
And it came out at the perfect time, literally days before YouTube got its own Hero Cat.
Right.
The Hero Cat that saved the little boy from the raging dog.
Absolutely. If I had it not gone viral immediately the way that it has, I would have tracked that guy down and found a way to license that footage and turn.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, who has this? Because there's Action Cat, there's Hero Cat.
Right.
I'm like, somebody is going to be after this.
Absolutely. So we've got that. We've got Bo Plushy Gangsta, which has been doing really, really well. And that's by a Russian creator named Pavel Babanov. I'm hoping I say that. Pavel, I'm so sorry if I butchered your name again.
We know Pavel. We got Pavel away.
Yes. We got, and then we've got the trades that are coming out. We got The Fracture, which just finished its second volume by Sean Gabarin and Chaz Coney, which was a lot of fun. I don't know if you're not familiar with Fracture. Fracture is the story of this guy named Jeff who is a multiple personality, and every time he has a new fracture, he creates a different personality. Problem is two of his personalities are Tryon City's greatest superhero and also its greatest supervillain. So
it's like when he's sort of blacking out, he's trying to track down like his other half.
Right. Well, not even that he's trying to. It's very the way that it's done is it's. pretty brilliant, actually, the way that Sean and Chad set the whole thing up. Because in the second volume, what happens is Virtue, who is the hero, Jeff creates a clone body for Virtue's personality to inhabit, and Virtue has all of Jeff's positive attributes, but none of his patience or his temperament. So Virtue's basically gone insane.
Okay, because I remember the first volume.
Right.
So there's another volume out.
Right, there's another volume out that's coming out. We just wrapped up Jackhammer, which is sort of a noir.
I love that book. Oh, holy hell, do I love that book. That's like my favorite book of the year.
So we wrapped up the Final Plague, and there's going to be a new Final Plague series coming out very, very soon. We've got Itty Bitty Bunnies and Rainbow Pixie Candyland, the first issue, which just came out this past week.
That looks like an Adult Swim cartoon or something.
It is fucking insane. It really is. It is. I have not laughed that hard in a comic in a very long time. And Dean Rankin, who's the creator of Itty Bitty Bunnies, who's also done like The Simpsons and For Bongo and just a bunch of like Mad Magazine in Australia and just a bunch of other stuff, he's a funny fucking guy, and it's just, you know, an absolute genius. But, you know, it's just a very different, you know, I don't even think in that territory. Like my sense of humor is much drier.
I don't understand how people do that either.
No.
Like, I don't get it.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, like even the My Little Pony stuff, I'm like, how do you people do this? Like, just how?
It's a very specific mindset. Well, you know, let's segue in from My Little Pony to Vamplets, which is
designed by
Gail Middleton, who also designed My Little Pony and A Little Pet Shop. And then I just found out that she did the Disney Palace Pets designs. She did those too. But, you know, it's going from super cutesy, and, you know, she's done stuff for Spielberg. She's worked with Tim Burton. She goes from, like, the super cutesy stuff to the Vamplet stuff, which is adorable in its own right. But, you know,
it's my kind of horror.
Right, exactly. It's gothic.
It's the only kind of horror I can deal
right,
with.
Right, it's very gothic, like, and very, you know.
Adorable.
Yes, exactly. So.
And there, you know, and because Dave Dwunge is on there, Bill Blankenship,
yeah.
It's like there's a stink bug that doesn't stink in there.
No.
So
Amanda,
he's like,
Coronado, who's the artist, is a sweetheart and incredibly talented illustrator. Just, you know,
such a great book.
Yeah, yeah. This has been.
And the toys.
And the toys. Well, yeah, you know, we do cute with the toys. The Vamplets dolls do really, really well for us. Another thing that we announced at the Diamond Show is that we picked up the license for a Norwegian toy line that's going to be a Toys R Us exclusive for 3 months called Soft Spots. And it's basically for the My Little Pony crowd. It's these tiny little plastic dogs, and there's like six different dogs and multiple versions of that dog. So it's sort of like, remember when we were kids and they had the Smurfs, they first brought the Smurfs over?
Uh-huh.
Basically the same, yeah. The same kind of thing. But there's play sets, and this thing's huge. And in Europe, and we're going to be doing the toys will be available through Diamond, but they're exclusive for Toys R Us. There's going to be TV commercials. There's going to be TV commercials on Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon. There's, you know, we're doing a tie-in comic activity book that's going to come out in October. That's going to be advertised on television, on the TV commercials. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. This is a huge, huge
step. That sounds like an insane evolution of Action Lab, because, like, I mean, things sort of like shot out of like PKD Media,
right.
Like, you know, it was just like all these guys that I know somehow coming together and we're like, this is what we're going to do.
Well,
now it's this. Oh my God.
It's a confluence of elements, you know? You put the right pieces together and things just start to work, but everybody works extremely hard at what they're doing, you know? We all take it very, very seriously. And, you know, it's part of the reason why I decided to join the company in the first place was I saw what they were doing and I saw the potential. It's the reason why I brought Molly to Action Lab in the first place. It's because I knew that these guys were going somewhere, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Now, what is the – I'm not sure. This might be more of a Brian question than for you, but since you have Molly Danger there and you ran a Kickstarter,
right,
but published, you know, with – Action Lab. I know Vamplets did a similar sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They had a Kickstarter as well.
Right.
So what responsibility, is there like a standard or is every project different? But like, I'm wondering what the responsibility is of the publisher.
Every project is handled different. Every contract is handled differently depending on how the books are financed and, you know, who's bringing what to the table. And then after the initial financing is figured out and structured, then we structure the rest of the contract around that. Like, for example, because I paid for half the print run, it wasn't as much of a heavy burden on Action Lab's part.
Okay.
So, you know, that helped in the negotiations as well. So, you know, every contract is handled differently. But one of the things that we offer as a company is that depending on the creator, we also offer representation for other media.
Okay.
So, you know, for a small percent, for a small, like, agency fee, basically.
Okay. So what other of the titles, because, like, I mean, Vamplets is huge.
Right.
And
Soft Spots is going to be huge, too.
Soft Spots is going to be huge. So, you know, what's the approach for stuff that's not cutesy for the, you know, either, you know, T+.
Right. Well,
let's say, lines. Like, what's going on, like, as far as, like, is there an outreach beyond the comics?
No, there's absolutely an outreach beyond the comics. And it's really sort of taking, you know, every opportunity to do cross-promotion. Like, for example, we're relaunching Zombie Tramp with a third volume. We have a brand-new artist, T.M. Chu. Dan Mendoza, who's the original creator of Zombie Tramp, is going to be co-writing the book with Jason Martin, who's also coloring and editing the book. We're relaunching the first issue with a series of covers, one by Jerry Gaylord, one by TM Chu, one by Josh Howard, and then I did a retailer exclusive cover where the retailer, if you order 250 copies, the retailer can get their name on the cover of the book.
Okay.
So, and we're investigating any and all opportunities. It's a little bit more difficult with the Danger Zone stuff. It's not impossible. You know, you just have to find the right audience and the right licensing partners who want to get involved with certain books. One of the other books that we're launching in August is a book called First Hero, which is by a writer named Anthony Rutgazer and an artist named Philip Seve, with covers by Lee Motor of Wonder Woman fame and of Shinku fame. And I also did a cover for that, an alternate cover for that.
Sure, that's why your business card is the size of a bumper sticker.
Exactly. But again, you know, First Hero, it's about a Marine who, while he's in Afghanistan being tortured, discovers that he has superhuman powers. The problem is that everybody in their world who gains superpowers immediately goes insane. So he's the first one who's kind of holding on to his insanity. Holding on to his sanity, at least for the time being.
Well, I know that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
That's what you know, we're gonna use as my excuse.
Right.
Perfectly.
I think one of the things that makes Action Lab one of the better companies. And I don't want to say better is a wrong word, because my big thing is that I feel like every company in this industry is in this together. You know, sink or swim.
It's a big enough sandbox.
Right, exactly. But what sets us apart is the fact that our line of comics runs the gamut from small children with stuff like Vamplets and, you know, Soft Spots, all the way up to Final Plague and First Hero and Zombie Tramp. You know, and there's no disconnect between the two. You know, we treat them all equally. We treat every book equally. We treat every creator equally. No one has any more importance in the company than any other creator who's bringing their project to us. And it's very important for me as the marketing director. You know, my one rule is to promote everyone's book the same way that I promote myself. The energy that I put into my promotion when I promote myself is the same energy that I give to every other book, and the same energy that I give, the same attention that I give to everybody else's book.
Well, the feeling that I get, as you know, come from the press and consumer side, is that it feels like a team.
Oh, absolutely.
Where,
absolutely.
You know, like if I shoot out a question, like on Twitter through email or something, I know somebody's going to get back to me.
Right.
And it might be a different person.
Right.
But it's usually like it's usually going to be you, but sometimes I'll just hear like directly from a creator who sees it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's like, it really does feel like that there's a whole team involvement.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
You know, and I know that if I've got like some kind of question where I'm like, "Hey, I just really don't know," I can, you know, like I can just shoot somebody a message.
It's a very, we try to keep things as close as possible. We have weekly, you know, bi-weekly meetings about on the marketing end, on the public, you know, once a month we'll all have what we call an all-hands call, where all of the upper management of the company gets together on the call and hashes out whatever issues aren't hashed out in either the marketing meeting or the publishing meeting. And I try to make sure, at least on my end, that everybody is aware of what I'm doing and who I'm approaching and what creators I'm dealing with, because everybody has different issues. And I don't want to step on anybody's toes in case somebody else is working on something with a certain person.
Yeah, and it's just like people have different ideas and backgrounds. You know, it can just, you never know where the next right thing is
going to
come from.
Exactly. You never know what's going to take off, what's going to do well. It's a crapshoot, and it's hard. It is a small market. And, you know, it's a small market compared to other forms of entertainment, but there's a lot of potential and there is a lot of money to be made within the comics market, obviously, you know.
Right.
It's how, you know, you treat it. And for a company the size of Action Lab, because Action Lab has a relatively small staff. But, you know, we've been around for almost 5 years. Next year will be our 50 year anniversary. And we're already planning, you know, what we're going to be doing for year five and, you know, our promotion for our 50 year anniversary. And, you know, something that we will be announcing sometime early next year. And as far as like new titles and new initiatives and, you know, just taking that next leap forward.
Well, I know that at some point I'm expecting an Action Lab Expo the way that they have Image Expo.
From your lips to God's ears, babe.
Because that's just, you know, the thing that's in my head.
Yeah. It would be nice. It would be nice. I think that, you know, the level of diversity we have, we could pull that off. And there's, you know, and I'm constantly, like, you know, fielding you know, bigger name creators, like people that I know, people who if you're in the bar at a certain time of night, go, I've got this idea for this thing, and I go, well, you know what, we've got a home for you if you want to bring it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know. It's so, because of the range of people that I interact with on Twitter, there's people, at my level starting out, and then there's people, sort of middle ground, and then there's the guys like Jimmy Palmiotti,
right.
It's like, I know this broad range of people, and when somebody's like, God, I've got, this thing, and I don't know where to pitch at this point.
Right.
Just like, okay, well, here's my top three suggestions.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Action Lab's always in there, so.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And this is, nothing against, Image Comics, for example. But right now, Image Comics is they're concentrating on their big guns. They're concentrating on Brian Hitch and Grant Morrison and Chris Roberson. Well, no, Chris is Monkey Brain. Never mind. Chris is awesome. Monkey Brain is awesome. I love Monkey Brain books.
Yeah, I love Monkey Brain. That was, in fact, one of the ones that I mentioned in the tweet with Action Lab.
No, but you know what I'm saying. They are concentrating on the guys who, for whatever personal reasons, have left Marvel and DC to do their own thing, which is fine, And we welcome those guys at Action Lab as well. But Image is not looking at a Jeremy Holt, for example.
Yeah.
Or if they are, they're not going to give him the same consideration that they would give.
Which is interesting, because Jeremy was so connected with Image, to begin with.
Right.
And
things change,
things change and whatever, Ryan Lindsay, you got, it's like, that these guys sort of shift from where they were and just find, they find the path that works for them.
Right.
And sometimes it means finding a new target for their projects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, we are a large enough company that we can bear the financial burden, but we're a small enough company that we are still willing to take those kinds of risks.
Yeah, so Jeremy's Southern Dog is going to be coming.
Yes, the Southern Dog is shipping, first issue shipping in August. Let's see, what else is coming out in August? I'm looking at the wrong thing. I should know it off the top of my head, but it's been a long week. So we've got Hero Cats, which, the best way that I can describe it, it's sort of the JLA meets Cats versus Dogs. It's about a tactical team of actual cats who protect the world from aliens and monsters, and it's very cool and it's very cute. We've got Zombie Tramp, which is returning. This is the third series. The first two volumes are in trade, so if you're interested. And all of our titles are available through Comixology as well, through some straight, some guided view. Let's see, what else is coming out in August? Skyward, which with Darwin Cook cover. Give me a second while I vamp.
That's all right.
There we go. So, there's a lot of really good stuff. So we got the Bow Plushie Gangsta trade paperback. We've got Itty Bitty Bunnies in Rainbow Pixie Candyland Save Xmas number one, which is the second issue technically of Itty Bitty Bunnies. We've got Midnight Tiger number two. I forgot to mention, I would be remiss in mentioning Martheus Wade's Shinobi Ninja Princess is coming out in August. Finally.
Oh,
finally.
Okay. Because he's been really productive. Like the last 12 months, what is going on?
He's been working on these six issues. He has all six issues done, so they will ship on time. That's another thing that we pride ourselves on, especially lately, because we've had some lateness issues in the past. But now part of our operating procedure is that the miniseries is produced in its entirety before the first issue ships.
Yeah, I like that better.
Yeah.
If I were the creator, I would just feel so much more less less pressure about the situation. Like, you know, it's I can't imagine being under the gun.
It's tough. I'm under the gun right now.
Yeah.
I'm a little...
I mean, I know that's like the norm.
I don't like it. I have to be honest. I really don't like it because it's not a healthy way to live. And
yeah,
it's, you know, it's great when you're 25, but when you're 42, not so
much. I know, right? Like, no. Like, you just want to, you know, you want to have your schedule. You want to come home at the, you know, the end of the day.
Right.
You want to know that the dinner's going to be ready at 6. And
yeah, that's a big difference. But even, you know, even with my non-comics work, sometimes it's the same way. I had to do a last minute job last week, and it was kind of the same thing. But so Shinobi Ninja Princess is finally coming out, number one. And then we've got Scum of the Earth, which was one of our digital first titles, and the second issue of that is shipping. It's a bi-monthly series. It's by a writer named Mark Bertolini and an artist named Rob Cronenborough. And it's pretty cool, actually. I took a look at it. It's not necessarily something that I would do as a creator, but it's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, I remember I got to chat with I don't know if I can't remember now if the artist was there. I don't think he was. I got to chat with Mark at mm-hmm. at one of the shows.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and it's one of these things where I'm just like, I know you from Twitter.
Isn't that always the way though?
It is my opening line for everything now.
It's usually like I'll meet people and they go, hey, you know, we're Facebook friends. And this is like, yeah. Do we talk all? Because there are certain people on Facebook, like you and I talk all the time.
Yeah. And then it's like Facebook like hides 98% of your people.
Yeah, that's true too. That's not fun.
Yeah, so there's people that I don't, I'm like, how do I know you? It's like, oh, we were in a, what? We were in a costume shoot one time 8 years ago? No.
Although I did, like, on Twitter recently get contacted by a guy that I went to grade school with, Cliff Charles, who has been a DP for Spike Lee for, like, the last 10 years.
Whoa.
when you completely lose track of people, and I think it was probably the same thing with him. Like, he got in contact with me, and I was like, is this Jamal from PS blah, blah, blah? I was like, yeah. Is Clifford? I was like, yeah, man, how you doing? So,
wild.
I was like, oh, crap. You know, I was like, look at what you did.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I mean, he was the guy that, you know, when we were kids, we were the guys who would hide under our desk drawing comic books in class. So
yeah. I bet up in my attic I've still got like my old portfolio of like comics and paintings and stuff. I'm sure it's up there, probably filled with stink bugs, but I'm sure it's up there.
I don't feel bad. My wife still has her portfolio. Yeah, her comics portfolio. She hasn't, you know, she doesn't draw as often as I personally think she should, because I think she's very talented. She doesn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's a creative.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's awesome. But
we'll pull her in. Yeah, she will get the Kool-Aid at some point.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think being married to me and being with me for like the last 8 years, I think she's kind of.
She does it.
Like, she's seen me at like 4 o'clock in the morning, like slamming my head against the desk, going, I've got to finish this. I've got to finish this.
But she handles it, man.
Yeah.
She handles you. She handles Katie.
Yeah, exactly. She's a marvel. She really is.
That's cool. I mean, that's like she would be like the muse. Like, she sounds like she's the type of person that you would base a character on.
Oh, I've stuck her in stuff, and there's definitely pieces of her, you know, in Molly Danger, and there's pieces of Katie in Molly Danger as well, just, you know, personality wise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're definitely in there. And it's actually funny because the people who know us, who are friends of my wife's, like, there were a bunch of people when we had the launch party last year after New York Comic Con, there were a bunch of her friends who would look at the cover of the book, and they'd look at me and go, so did you base this on Corinne or did you base this on Katie? And I'd look and was like, does it matter?
Yeah.
Like, either way, does it matter?
It's a fusion.
Exactly. Like, Katie's mini-me. Are you kidding?
Yeah. It is. There's just this influence. It's a normal thing to do.
This is very true. Which is funny because, in a good way, I think that my attitude towards Molly and my attitude towards, you know, how women are depicted in comics is very much shaped by my relationships with them. And my relationship with my mom and my sisters and with my nieces. So especially, you know, over the last, you know, 10, 12 years where I've found myself more and more involved with, you know, female oriented projects. And, you know, they're definitely a big part of shaping, you know, my take on it, and which wasn't a bad take in the first place. You know,
but it helps you grow.
It does. I mean, it certainly does. And
because I mean, like, one of your creators, Jeremy Whitley, mm-hmm. We met up. Awesome Con.
Right.
And I got to meet his wife.
Right.
And she and I just had a blast.
Oh, yeah. No, Alicia's awesome.
And, you know, so it was one of those things where I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So it's like we're like not even talking comics. It's like we're just bonding. We're just having this human moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I can go on to his, you know, when I see his tweets now, and he's big on Tumblr, too.
Right.
And he, you know, very... I don't want to, it sounds so bad to say feminist agenda, because
right.
That sounds like such a bad word.
No, I don't think it's necessarily anything wrong
but it's a platform.
Right.
Like I'm a dude and I'm speaking out.
Right.
Because, you know, because of this. And it's like, it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, do we need the men to come save us? Well, on the other hand, it's really good to have the support.
Well, yeah. Because Jeremy and I get along pretty well. But I think that's one of the points where we sort of divert. I can't call myself a feminist because I don't know what it feels like to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never been in that position, and I've never been in the types of situations where, you know, a woman would feel that she is being exploited or abused in that manner. So I can't go there, you know, in my head. All I can do is try to be as sympathetic as possible. From my experience, because my experience is very, very different, and it's going to be very different. You know, I don't normally, you know, get catcalled, for example. that's just not a part of. I've had my ass pinched a couple of times, but
it is Fleet Week. You know, you can go up to the city.
Yeah. You know, so I don't go from it from that perspective. And this is the way that I was raised. You know, I was raised by a single mother, you know, who was a very strong woman, you know, emotionally and in some cases physically. But I was raised that on a platform of respect more than anything else. And it doesn't mean that the impulses, the natural impulses that I have to be, you know, pushed aside completely. But I don't allow that to interfere with treating other people, both men and women, with the highest level of respect at all times. And it sounds weird. I mean, and that's basically what it comes down to. It's just it's a matter of respecting everybody as individuals and respecting everybody for who they are as a person, and knowing that I can't fully understand different people's points of view, but I respect that they have them, and I respect that they have the right to go through their lives without being abused or feeling molested or feeling maligned as I do.
Well, I think that's been a really big point, just having empathy,
right,
with the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
That's been coming up a lot, and you know, feminism, they tend to somehow be politically aligned.
Right.
And, you know, like, we've got more states getting marriage equality.
Oh, which I'm 100% for, you know.
And, but that's the thing. It's like, it doesn't, when you have empathy, that doesn't mean that you're placing these people saying, oh, they deserve more.
Right.
It's not saying, it's not an entitlement thing. It's saying, I feel for you.
Right.
And, you know, and nobody should be going through this.
Right. I would never understand what it means to be a gay man in the United States.
Yeah. But, like, this is why there's no, you know, there's no heterosexual pride day, because you don't need it.
Yes, there is. It's called a Super Bowl.
Oh, well, there's that. Yeah. Yeah. Until the halftime show.
Yeah. That's true.
Then, no.
But wasn't Bruno Mars fabulous?
He really, you know,
he's
come
actually
on.
He is. I was on YouTube and I found a clip of him at like 6 years old from 1992, like in a little Elvis outfit performing with his family.
Aww. That's too cute. It's like little Ricky Martin.
Yeah, basically,
like when he's
basically, I remember Ricky. I had one of my Aunt Janet's kids, her daughter Lisa, was a huge Menudo fan back in the day. Oh, so I remember Ricky Martin.
Oh my gosh. It's just, yeah, he's something. He is something indeed. I've played some Ricky Martin loudly at times. Oh my goodness. All right, Jamal, this has been amazing.
Oh, thank you.
We've run the gamut of emotions, and I appreciate that you allowed that to happen.
No problem. I enjoy talking to you. You know that.
That's great. So where is San Diego your next stop then? Because we're in the end of May.
We're in the end of May. So, yeah, I think San Diego is my – since I'm not doing any shows in June, although knowing me, something will come up. But so, yeah, San Diego, then Connecticut Comic Con in August. Looks like I might be going to Fan Expo as well, and I may even, we're trying to work out the details, but Action Lab and myself will probably be at Pittsburgh Comic Con in September.
Okay. That's a good lineup.
And that's just up until September. There's still other stuff going on. There's things that are in motion that haven't been finalized yet, and you know, like I said, I'm going to Tacoma, Washington at the end of the year. You know, I'm earning those frequent flyer miles. I really
am. It's the glamorous life of comics that everybody wants.
Exactly. Although, as my friend Carolyn likes to remind me, you know, 20 years ago, this was exactly what I wanted. And now that I have it, I occasionally complain. But it's a good complaint.
It is. You know, it's a lot of people will be like that.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, they might bitch about deadlines, and then they're like, you know, I really just need to shut the hell
up.
Yeah.
I always feel guilty about that, too, actually, because every so often, like, you know, as all artists do, you know, you look at your work and you wonder if it's any good or, you know, why you do what you do. But then you have to remind yourself that there are literally millions of people who would love to be in the position that I've found myself in. And I am blessed for that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's really cool when there's some like really inspiring creators out there, you know, it seems like it's like any given time that you can just like find the words of encouragement just to somebody that's like really chill and they're busy and they've reached some sort of homeostasis with balance. It's like balancing everything.
This is true.
And there's just, and it's like Dean Haspiel is one of these guys.
Yeah.
And you know, I can like go up to him at a show and be about to snap, and he's just like, you know, he's sort of got that Sean Pryor thing.
Right.
He's just like, you know, he's like, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
You know?
No, but okay. Again, Dean is one of those guys. He's been doing this so long. I remember Dean's first work, like. The first thing that he ever did that I saw was like a fill-in story in an issue of Justice League back in the 80s. And I remind him of that every once in a while. But you know, look at how you look at how far he's come and how you know he's taken his bumps and bruises along the way, just like we all have. But you know, I like to think that if you can come out on the other side a little bit stronger because of it, then you know you're not doing half bad. And it doesn't really matter how many bumps or bruises you take, you know, if you have the ability to get up the next day and keep moving, then you're all right.
Yeah, yeah. So find those people, whatever your platform, if it's, you know, Tumblr, Twitter, or whatever, you know, find them, follow them, latch on, and, you know, and just embrace it.
Exactly.
Yep. You know? Because it just sometimes it's just really helpful to like it's like those little meaningful quotes that get you through the day. And sometimes you need the really humorous ones, too.
That's true.
You know, like Andy Parks and Phil Hester. Their bromance is remarkable. I just, you know, I'm constantly inviting myself to their conversations. Andy says hi, by the way.
Oh, tell him I said, I haven't seen him since Dallas.
All right.
Yeah, I have to give him a talk. I have to talk to him at some point. But, because I need him to, you know, I would love for him and Phil to do something for us. That's basically, you know, we talked about it a little bit. When I saw him, I need to pester him again.
I approve of this message. And I will somehow worm my way in. Even if it's just like a cameo appearance
in
the
panel.
Because I adore them. They're great.
Yeah, no, they are. They are awesome. And they have, you know, they've always treated me kindly.
Cool. Well, I will not be at San Diego, but I will definitely like be running into you somewhere.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I'll pop over to New York undoubtedly, and even in the fall. But I'll be at that June show because I want to check it out. I'm curious about it.
Yeah, let me know how that goes. I, you know, I'm sure people will fill me in, but yeah, I'd love to hear your perspective on it.
All right, Jamal. Last thing, let's get some links so people know where to find you and follow you.
Okay, pretty much if you just type in Jamal Igle, JAMALIGLE, you can find me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Tumblr. I have a my own webpage, which is JamalIgle.com. You can check out MollyDanger.com to see all things Molly Danger, and of course, there's ActionLabComics.com.
Absolutely. And then, yeah, and that's a good way, like, to once you start following the Action Lab stuff or finding the Action Lab page, you can see, like, the names of all the creators and just start following them because there's so many different kinds of people and they're all really fabulous. All right. Well, thanks again, Jamal. Have a good Memorial Day long weekend there on your travels.
Yeah, you too.
And guys, don't forget, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Elizabeth Amber, and that the website is 18plusamberunmasked.com. If you have any questions and feedback, just shoot them my way. I'll be more than happy to get back to you. Please be nice. And cheers.